Okay, let's take the third thing now. Maybe he doesn't. You say it certainly appears to be true of the case that some people with high IQs don't have much common sense, and some people with average IQs have a good deal of common sense. You agree that this is true? If so, how do you fit this into your conceptual scheme? Do you explain it solely as the influence of personality factors, or do you postulate the existence of another kind of mental ability not currently measured by IQ? Well, that's a very big and difficult question. It's certainly true that persons with high IQs sometimes do things that we think show poor judgment or a lack of common sense. So do people with average and low IQs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of this has a kind of anecdotal status.
Mm-hmm.
You see, what someone should do, and I'm not sure that it's been done, I've never seen it done in my wide reading of the literature, that is to get up a series of questions or so that would be criteria of common sense.
Uh-huh.
And make a kind of test out of this. How whether there is a kind of common factor that you could call common sense. That is, whether there's a general factor among types of behaviors you would say represented common sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems very likely to me that there wouldn't be.
That there would not be?
That there would not be, yeah.
Uh-huh.
That what we call common sense is something that's very situation specific. And it's very dependent on one's experience in those kinds of situations. For example, I can think of a person of rather average intelligence who was once a used car salesman. And he has a lot of what you would call savvy and common sense and street smart about cars. Now, whenever he buys a car, he is less apt to be taken in, especially if he's buying a used car, than would be a person who had no experience with used car dealers. See, and you could get some person go in and really be taken by a used car dealer. You'd say, well, that guy's just got no common sense to believe that this car had new tires when they were only tires that had been painted with a rubberized paint to make them look new and all of this. In other words, you'd say this fellow was naive. He might be a Nobel Prize winner in physics. You'd say, what a naive person. He has no common sense. That's because he's not experienced in that particular realm.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
I think this has a lot to do with one's life experiences. It has to do, I think, in part with personality. I think that you'll find, for example, that extroverts probably have more common sense in this sense than introverts. Partly because they have more interaction with the social world.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. That's interesting.
And therefore more experience of it. And it also has to do with interest and so forth. A person has just so many waking hours, and if your interests go largely to things that do not involve action in the world, the affairs of the world, so to speak, say an Immanuel Kant who's sitting around thinking about the deepest questions in philosophy of his time and so on, spending hours a day doing that, can't be learning a great deal about some of the practical things in the world that a merchant, let's say, is dealing with people and what we regard as common sense situations.
Right,
all
right.
The time. So when
yeah.
if he goes to a market, or so, for example, I seem to have much less common sense in a store than my wife has. She'll be shocked that I'm willing to take something and put it in the shopping basket. She says, look at the price on that. You know, that's way out of line compared to what you can get at other stores. Well, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
So all of these kinds of things, I think common sense is a host of all kinds of situation-specific experiences and so forth, plus what a person values, what a person thinks represents his own idea of being intelligent and so on. See, it doesn't bother an Einstein, let's say, to be considered naive about certain, say, financial matters and so forth. He doesn't mind. mind not being smart in that. Just as some people don't mind not being good at sports.
Mm-hmm.
That their particular self-identity and self-image isn't tied up with a particular sphere of action.
Also, someone like Einstein would be less likely to conceal the stupid or naive things that he might do or say, and he would just think if he did something really that seemed really off the wall, he might think, well, that's interesting that I've done something that's so stupid. He might, because he already knows that he's brilliant. You see what I mean? Whereas these extroverted people who are always in social interactions and stuff, when they make a blunder, they can conceal it more readily.
Right. Yes. Well, that may be a part of it too. There's an interesting anecdote about Einstein buying an elevator for his one-story house. An elevator salesman came to him and sold him this elevator, and he didn't really want it, and his daughter had to cancel the order. She said, "Why on earth did you ever buy an elevator for just a one-story house?" He said, "Well, the fellow was so nice and gave such convincing sales talk that I just couldn't turn him down." You say, well, you know, the guy's got no common sense. He's the greatest scientific mind since Newton, but the average person would never get into that kind of a fix.
Yeah, that's a perfect example.
But, so I don't think that this represents any kind of really measurable ability, independently of some personality factors, situation-specific kinds of experience, and interests and values.
Uh-huh.
So that's about all I would have to say about that. And I think that if someone made up an inventory of instances of behaving in a judicious and sensible way in many different situations, you would find that scores on that kind of an inventory would be loaded on the same G factor that is loaded in intelligence tests. Would be positively loaded.
Uh-huh.
If you took enough of these kinds of situations, because, for example, they find that, well, in the armed forces where they took in persons with test scores lower than the normal cutoff to see what could be done with these very low-scoring persons. They were persons below the 30th percentile in intelligence. They let them in on an experimental basis. Project 100,000 that was carried out in the armed forces some years ago. Well, they found that these people had a much greater difficulty just managing their personal lives. They got into many more kinds of personal difficulties.
Uh-huh.
Financial, marital, legal, all kinds of things where they made poor judgments, and so on.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So,
you know,
they actually had less common sense, you might say. They were a liability, Navy had to sort of manage their lives.
Yeah, and it's like you expect that they are not going to have much common sense, and somehow people expect that people with real high IQs will. So when they don't, a big deal is made out of it, and everybody
right,
thinks
the exceptions stand out.
Yeah, it's interesting because see, when I wrote this question, I thought to myself that there was a thing. I thought there was something else like common sense, and I thought that you would probably say that you didn't think there was. But I thought, I wonder what he's going to say. and you know, all that you've just said, now I've changed my mind, you know. Anyway, it's just interesting.
Yeah, well, there's a whole book out now called Practical Intelligence, which is about this whole issue, really. It's written by almost entirely by people who believe that there is some other kind of intelligence besides the psychometric G that we talk about that runs through all intelligence tests. But I'm fairly convinced that if you made up any test of practical intelligence, it would be highly G-loaded, and some of the evidence in this book shows that that's the case.
Uh-huh.
That you're really talking about the same general factor, but it can be modified in terms of situational experiences.
Yeah. Well, the next question was about social intelligence, and
say very much the same kind of thing about that. I think social intelligence is probably G plus extroversion mainly.
Uh-huh.
And so amount of social experience they have. This is partly a function of their intellectual interest and of their personality. Extroverts have more social experience than others. And also by the kinds of work they do and kinds of interests they have.
Right.
I believe that my own social intelligence, for example, increased between adolescence and middle age. I think there's a rather steady increase because I was forced to have more interactions with people in a wider variety of situations and so on. And if you care about doing things right, then you learn the things that you have to know.
Yeah.
And so I think I developed somewhat greater social intelligence. It's still nothing to brag about. But I do know people who I think are smarter than I am who have worse social intelligence. But they're probably people who haven't valued it at all.
Well, it does seem to be, my own casual observation of this would be that women are just, you know, sort of more oriented towards people. And I would say that, like, for example, thinking about my mother and my father, I mean, my father's a lot smarter than my mother is, but she still has to explain very, very fundamental things to him about what to say and what not to say, you know. It's just kind of...
I know three really famous scientists. I won't mention their names, and I know their wives. And in every case, both the husband and wife agree that the wife has a lot more social intelligence.
Yeah.
They seem to be able to read other people better. They know who are the people who are sincere admirers and who are the sycophants and things like that. I know my own wife, for example, I noticed it's better at dealing with people when you have to get something out of these people, when you want favors done by them.
Uh-huh.
You know, sales people, or you're returning something that you really didn't want to buy and things like that, and getting a nice response from them. My wife is better at that than I am. She's much less blunt and could turn on the charm in a way that is totally alien to my nature. So, but I know men who are like that too, and I think that to be successful in certain fields, one has to have this kind of social skill. I wouldn't call it intelligence, I would call it a skill. And I think it's a developed skill that comes from having values that lie in that realm, and also an extroverted personality.
But I mean, nobody has managed to do anything with this. I remember reading about this a long time ago. Nobody has managed to create this.
No, I haven't seen any real tests of social skill or anything like that.
Yeah.
I think that employers would try to pick that up in interviews. I think that's one of the things that they may look for in the interview situation, simply because there are no really good measures of it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think it's a fairly an acquired kind of skill, very much like what we call practical or common sense intelligence in that way. So there's not much more I can say about that. There is a literature on this, and it's a literature that I haven't looked into very recently, so I don't know what the latest views on it really are. But I haven't seen anything dramatic come out on this in the last few years. I'm just aware that there are articles in the journals that come out now and then having to do with social intelligence, but they never seem to come to any very strong conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next question, 5, do you think Jews are overrepresented among your critics and underrepresented among your supporters, and so why? I think this is almost impossible to answer in any way that isn't so highly subjective that the answer is practically worthless. For one thing, you have to realize that many of the people in the behavioral sciences are Jewish. That the Jews are overrepresented, you might say, in the behavioral sciences and in the academic world in general. And of course, most of my critics are in that category.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would find quite a few critics who were Jewish. But then I also know quite a few people who assume a position similar to mine who are Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know what to make of that. There's one other factor, however. Jews, on the whole, tend to be politically liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And persons of that persuasion tend to take a strongly environmentalist position
mm-hmm.
about human differences of all kinds. And the other thing that can be noted is that groups that have been rather conspicuously successful don't like to have it pointed out that their success may be in any way inherent in anything about their own, you know, their nature, that it's a result of their culture, their values, their effort.
Mm-hmm.
This is even true of Asians now. Oprah Winfrey had a show where she had a number of Asians on who were, and they were discussing the Asian superiority and scholastic performance and all of that. And they all insisted that it was not because they were really different, but because they valued achievement more highly than other groups. There may be some truth in that, in part.
Yeah.
But
also, it would be kind of gauche to say, well, the reason I'm so successful is because I was born brilliant, you know. I mean,
right.
You couldn't really say that. So.
Right. Well, you know, on a radio talk show here in the United States, the late Lord Snow, formerly Sir C.P. Snow, the famous British author, was asked why there were so many Jewish Nobel Prize winners, considering what a small minority of the world's population they are. And there's such a large proportion of Nobel Prize winners. He said, well, he thought that there was a genetic basis for this. And he told me that he has never in his whole career, he had a political career, received so much vituperative mail as a result of that statement. And he was denounced in the Jewish press very strongly.
Do you think maybe they think that if they insist that it's environmental, this kind of vitiates envy and...
Envy and resentment,
and
right.
And resentment, yeah.
Yes, I think it's a defense mechanism, in a sense, to disclaim that the basis of this is anything other than something that's purely a matter of their personal values. But I think that's all that I can say about that that makes sense. It's interesting, however, that there's probably a fairly large proportion of Jews in this group that was surveyed by, what's her name, Rothman and, can't remember the names of those two authors that did the article in the public interest. You undoubtedly have a reprint of that article.
No, I don't have a reprint of the article. I have a letter that I put, tore out of Time magazine in which you quoted them. So I don't know what the name is.
Yes, well, the majority opinion in every case, on every question that they asked in their questionnaire about test bias, heritability of intelligence, genetic factors in race differences, and so on, was in agreement with my position. And yet probably a fairly large portion of the sample that was canvassed there are Jewish,
mm-hmm.
because they are behavioral scientists.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of these are what are called closet Jensenists. and they're willing to come out of the closet on an anonymous questionnaire. Okay. Have you noticed any tendency for women to be more or less likely to agree with you than men are? I just haven't the faintest idea. I haven't noticed any real difference one way or the other.
Okay.
In general, I think I have but opinions in this area expressed by men.
Uh-huh.
Particularly, say, businessmen and so forth who have employed persons of different racial groups and so forth, and have formed certain opinions about them, about their reliability and work capacity and so forth from their casual observations, their own experiences. And I don't know any women who've had those kinds of experiences. Two women school teachers that I've talked to, taught in predominantly minority schools, have had rather strong opinions about some of these things, although the opinions are often expressed on the environmentalist side. I mean, they seem to have strong opinions about the existence of the observed differences.
Uh-huh.
But they may still maintain purely environmentalist explanations of them.
Uh-huh.
They'll give you the whole litany of the popular environmental explanations for why the children in the suburban schools they once taught in are doing so much better. They may be 3 or 4 grade levels above the minority school that they've been transferred to, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to a number of teachers with those experiences. But those are very unsystematic observations. And one could, of course, research something like this by getting up questionnaires and giving random samples of men and women, or men and women teachers who've had comparable experiences. But it doesn't seem to me to be an important enough issue to warrant any real research effort.
Yeah, it's really not very important, actually. It was just mostly idle curiosity on my part, because, you know, it seemed to me that women tend to be a little bit more conformist, and they also tend to be a little bit more liberal, maybe.
Liberal and a bit more sentimental about some of these things.
Yeah,
it's interesting that my own parents are a kind of an example of this. Neither one of them had any knowledge about these issues, that is, any technical or scientific knowledge about them. But my father seemed to be able to sort of go along with my arguments. But my mother never really did, except that she, in a sense, never forgave me for the Harvard Review article. Thought that there was something, she failed somewhere, that I could have written such an article.
Are your parents still alive?
What was that?
Are your parents still alive?
No, neither one.
Yes. Oh, uh-huh.
But they were both alive at that time.
Uh-huh.
And they both read these things, and they read what was in the popular press and so forth. But my mother had a very sentimental attitude about these things and thought it was all a matter of education and time. People who were suppressed and so forth, victimized by racism and all of that, simply needed time to catch up.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a very popular kind of notion. Some of my my good neighbors here had the same very common belief.
Well, I think it's like, I mean, a lot of things, like, for example, the liberals' idea about how to run the economy, or, you know, about the racial question. I mean, there are a lot of things which, if you don't study them and you don't have real experience, you can easily have one of these views. I mean, you can be a reasonable, intelligent, nice, well-meaning person and have one of these views, and, you know, it's perfectly understandable.
Oh, right.
But,
I've run into that frequently, you know. And many of these people don't have the kind of background that's necessary for understanding the arguments at a technical level. And that's where the arguments really are. You know, the issue, when you really get into it, you have to get down to, you know, really very technical things.
Well, I think that, I think, you know, well, two of the most compelling points would be the issue of test bias. You know, the way you identify items, if they're going to be biased,
right.
And the fact that you don't find these things, like, you know, there's that, and then there's the fact that all these environmental things have been tried and failed to, you know, they can't find anything. But even for a person who doesn't know anything at all about the technical aspects of the argument, I mean, just the last 20 years if you just think about, like, well, I was flipping the TV around, you know how you sit there and just flip from one channel to the other when you have nothing to do. And I was watching, I don't know what it was, some kind of track meet. And every single one of the people there running around the track meet, you know, every single one was black. And it was some kind of a relay race, you know, short distance.
Right.
And, you know.
Well, of course, one can argue that, you know, that these physical differences that could make for excellence in athletic skills can't really be directly transferred over when you talk about cognitive abilities. You could say, well, sure, we know there are physical differences between races, and certain physical differences may give one race a statistical advantage in, say, running or jumping or swimming or whatever.
Right.
But there's no way to get from that to cognitive abilities.
Right, right. Now, I was just going to sort of list some general observations that the average person might have, showing that racial differences do exist.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
these people certainly acknowledge those differences, and of course another argument that they give, and I think there's some validity to it too, is that when they see people excelling in these things, more children try for them. There's certainly more black boys who want to be basketball players than who want to be concert violinists.
Right.
But at least in Europe, there are many Jewish boys whose parents want them to be concert violinists.
Right.
I mean, many of them have a violin thrust into their hands at a very early age.
But, okay, another thing would be, for example, if you look at the different countries in Africa, since independence, I read an interesting book recently about the history of various countries from the time of independence up to the present. And almost every single chapter started off, things looked real rosy. You know, there was a big celebration to celebrate the independence and blah, 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 blah. And then after a while, things, you know, they started to have trouble. And then within about 5 years, things were really getting to be in bad shape. In 10 years and 15 years, the gross national product or the per capita income has plummeted to a point that it's just, you know, I mean, and of course they always say it's because the colonial powers didn't give the Africans enough education, or they didn't do this or they didn't
right.
do that. But, I mean, there's
right.
so many implausible things. If you...
Well, you notice that hasn't happened in other colonies where the European nations have withdrawn from those colonies. It didn't happen in Singapore when the British got out.
Right.
It hasn't happened in many other parts of the world. It hasn't happened in India.
Right.
India has become a self-sufficient nation. It's developed a fairly high state of technology in certain areas now, and of course has the largest brain drain of any country in the world. I mean, a lot of them are enticed to Africa in order to run the technology there. And of course many of them come here into Canada and other more places where they can receive higher pay and better facilities for their line of work.
And then one other example I was going to say, I'm talking too much maybe, but I was just going to say, like, there's this dispute about whether blacks should, you know, there are not enough blacks who are coaches in the NFL. And, I mean, there are a lot of black players, but they're not very many black coaches, and maybe there was just one, I can't remember exactly, but.
Well, coaches, yeah.
And there are not very many black quarterbacks. And, I mean, when the average person sees, you know, what's happened in Africa, the business about, you know, what's going on in football, and the fact that in the schools,
well,
they just keep making one excuse,
you know,
after another.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that, all I'm saying is that it's just, the parsimonious explanation is that there's a difference, you know, in intelligence, whereas,
yeah,
if
I
you don't...
it's a difference in, I've given up use of the word intelligence, but I don't know if we have to get into that. Because it means too many things to too many people. And,
so you just say G?
It really encompasses a number of things in common usage. So I talk about the psychometric G, and I think that's where the difference really is.
Uh-huh.
Because there are other abilities independent of G in which the groups don't differ. or differ in the opposite direction even, and their cognitive abilities. But the G is so predominant and so important for any kind of intellectual activity that it shows up in just about everything people do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, all of these things you've mentioned certainly add to the plausibility of a sort of basic biological or evolutionary explanation. They certainly don't detract from the plausibility of this. They can't prove it, but they add up to a very strong plausibility, and I accept that. And I think, well, the majority of people who are questioned do. At least when they can answer anonymously.
Mm-hmm. It'd be so interesting to see if people had to sign their names. If you could do a study and you could, you know, have two large samples, one where they're supposed to sign their names and one where they're not,
right,
and see what kind of difference you get.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well, let's take up number 7, okay?
Okay.
Evidently, people have noticed the association between education and success and have concluded that the act of attending classes, reading books, taking exams, and especially receiving diplomas make people successful. Everyone is encouraged to go to college. Is this thinking confused? Just how much good is a college education in and of itself? Well, every time I see any kind of question, like the questions in this that you sent me here, I try to think of what kind of research would have to be done to answer them.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the kind of research one would have to do here is to have some criterion of success or something, and then see how much that's predicted by amount of education independently of intelligence, and amount of intelligence independently of education.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of thing has been done. If you use occupational status, for example, as a criterion, it turns out that both education and IQ make independent contributions to a person's occupational status. That can be easily misinterpreted because persons of, say, very low IQ never get into certain occupations, and there's this high correlation between amount of education and IQ. The correlation gotten lower in each succeeding decade because more and more people are required to go to school and do go to school. There's still a fairly high correlation, something like 0.6 or 7, between amount of education and IQ. And the vast, you know, the school dropouts and so forth tend to be largely the lower quarter of the IQ district.
Mm-hmm.
So, one can say that, of course, college, in and of itself, has become ambiguous, but college education, by in and of itself, if you mean for people who are all equated in IQ, will certainly make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at a group of persons, all say of IQ 120, half of whom have not gone beyond high school, and the other half of whom have graduated from college or graduate school, you'll find considerable differences in their occupational status, income, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So college education does make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
You control for IQ. On the other hand, if you look at the difference between relatively high and low IQ persons, all of the same education, you are often surprised that they have had the same, nominally the same amount of education, say a BA degree or something. A BA degree for a person with an IQ of 100 really amounts to a very different level of knowledge and competence than for a person with an IQ of 130.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they both have BA degrees, but as other things being equal, personality factors, dependability, and all those things, other things being equal, the person with 130 will doubt that, education has advantages, social and occupational and economic and so on, and I think personal advantages. I think that a person who is capable of doing a college level work definitely gets something out of going to college.
Mm-hmm.
He goes into an occupation that doesn't require a college education.
Mm-hmm.
I know a person who's never worked at all since getting out of college, but I think his life is very different. He hasn't had to work. He's born very wealthy. But his life has been very different as a result of having graduated from an Ivy League university and done graduate work in another Ivy League university than if he had never, finished high school.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what he's been exposed to, the interest and so forth that he has as a result of his background and education,
mm-hmm.
have caused him to lead a very different kind of life than he might have led otherwise. By my standards, a much richer kind of life,
mm-hmm.
intellectual life and so on, even though he's never had to work for a living. So I'm a believer in education in all of those senses. Do you have anything else in mind when you wrote that?
No, maybe it's kind of confusing what I was getting at, but what I meant was, if you control for IQ, how much more would the college education help? So you've answered my question.
Well, it does help.
And of course,
the thing is, I think the value of a college education, in a sense, increases with IQ.
Yeah.
Persons with relatively low IQ who've gone to college really seldom end up in occupations or have accomplishments that are commensurate with the majority of people who are college graduates.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, there are some persons with very high IQs who graduate from college but who are very unsuccessful. And one of the highest GRE scores that I've seen on any student that in 30 years in Berkeley was of a young woman whom we had to flunk out of the program. Not for intellectual reasons particularly, but just because of the tremendous undependability as a student.
Hmm.
And so there are a lot of factors that determine whether a person will succeed in college. Now, I think it's often forgotten that intellectual interests tend to go along with higher levels of intellectual ability. An example of this, I knew a couple of professors, they're married to each other, who adopted two children. And they adopted them when they were infants. And they knew something about the natural parents of these children. They were parents who were very average, or maybe even slightly below, and in totally unskilled occupations. And their main worry was that these children were going to be brought up in a very intellectual and cultured environment, and may develop interests along these lines, but not have the intellect to do anything about these interests, and therefore would be forever frustrated,
mm-hmm.
having intellectual interests without the intellect to pursue them.
Mm-hmm.
Now that these children are grown and are young adults, I have talked with these professors and asked them about their children and whether this worry of theirs ever panned out. It turns out that their children are very average, have very average occupations, and have no intellectual or cultural interests, almost none.
That's interesting.
They said they just didn't develop them. And I think that if a person doesn't have a certain amount of intellectual ability, that intellectual things are not found stimulating. They're boring to them.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to worry about it. And I think that many of the kids we see in colleges today, there's a college for everyone, literally. Colleges at different academic levels. I know of a college where the average IQ in the college is lower than that of the average IQ of high school graduates. They get sort of the lower half of the distribution of high school graduates. And, or the lower two-thirds, perhaps. And they actually counsel students away who have IQs over 120. They don't want to admit them to the college because they think they'll be cheated. Anyway, many of these students find college very boring and very irksome. And they're sort of forced to go by their parents, social pressures, and so on. And the instructors in such colleges find that they have to offer something more akin to entertainment than education to keep these kids enrolled and keep them happy. And they can come out saying they're college graduates, but they're certainly going to be different from a graduate of a highly selective college that maintained high academic standards and had a student body with strong intellectual interest.
Mm-hmm.